Hello?
Hi, I'm Lucy. It already happened. It already occurred. It came back for him. Aaron committed suicide.
Good evening, community. There are stories like the one we will tell tonight that seem to be a warning, that seem to want to teach us a lesson. And in this case, today's lesson is to be very careful with what we wish for and who we ask for it. Please take this story with great discretion, and if there are minors nearby, send them to sleep this time. As you have heard, it will touch on topics that are too strong, and perhaps it is not the right time to explain them or for them to learn through horror stories. I hope you are ready because it is time to start. To let ourselves be carried away, to turn off the light and immerse ourselves in the following story, in the next tale of the night. Hello, Uriel. Friends of Tales of the Night. What I'm about to narrate is probably the saddest and most terrifying story of my life. I'm going to share it anonymously this time, due to the delicate topics it deals with, although I have already shared other anecdotes with my real name visible. This story begins, or rather, to be more precise, it comes back to me, it revives, when on Monday, January 8th, 2024, after 20 years, we reunited. Aldo, Elias, Luis, Lucy, and myself. We reunited because Aaron took his own life. That was the news Lucy gave us the day before over a phone call. Somehow she managed to get all of our phone numbers. And this story would start more than 20 years ago, when we were in middle school, when it wasn't so common for all teenagers to have cell phones. In our case, for example, I don't remember any of us having one. Getting someone's number when you haven't had contact with them for 2 decades can be almost impossible. That's why I had never participated in a reunion. But for Lucy, it wasn't. She took care of finding, calling, and gathering all of us who were present that damned Friday, December 19th, 2003. I received a call from an unknown number that I let ring. I never answer numbers I don't know. In fact, I have a saying. If it's important, they'll call back. And that's what happened. When I answered, it took me a few seconds to recognize the voice on the other end of the line. So familiar, yet so changed at the same time.
Vic, is that you? It's Lucy. Lucy, from middle school. Aaron's wife.
I hadn't heard from her in years. 15 at least. At the moment she confirmed it was her, I felt a chill, as if I knew what she was about to say. Still, I dared to ask, to continue the conversation, as if there was something normal about that call. Lucy, how are you? How's Aaron?
It happened. It occurred. Aaron committed suicide.
I froze. Something inside me knew it. The moment I knew who was calling, something had been set in motion, a thought that could no longer be stopped, as if a series of events destined to happen were unfolding without anyone being able to do anything about it. Lucy told me that they would be holding a wake for Aaron all day, Monday at a funeral home south of Mexico City. I rushed to complete all my pending activities that day, and around 3:01 p.m., I headed over there. I had a strange nervousness upon arriving. I remember every detail. The difficulty I had finding parking. The sensation of the car keys in my hand as I closed the door. Every step I took to enter the funeral home. I looked for Aaron's name to go to the viewing room, but he was the only deceased being waked on that occasion. Luis, Aldo, and Elias were already there, accompanying Lucy. The first thing I noticed was that the candles were unlit. The coffin was closed. After hugging Lucy and offering my condolences, I asked her why. She told me that the candles wouldn't stay lit, that they had tried and decided it was better to leave them unlit on the coffin. She didn't respond. She just said that the following day, the body would be cremated and the ashes placed in a crypt. She wanted us to be present and, above all, to go to her house afterward to talk. To talk about what had happened 2 decades ago. We accepted. It was impossible to avoid that conversation. I was terrified to think about it. But we had time before that happened. It could be postponed for a few hours. And so we changed the subject and talked like friends, reuniting, as if there were no macabre story behind it. It was 2 a.m. when the 5 of us went out to smoke. The funeral home was practically empty. There were very few of Aaron's loved ones, and all the other viewing rooms were dark. I've always tried to lighten moments like these, at wakes, through laughter. I think it's a defense mechanism, because I always end up making a joke, some silly comment that provokes muffled laughter from those present. Perhaps in the midst of so much pain, laughter is a momentary respite for the soul. I don't remember what I said, but everyone laughed. Even Lucy couldn't contain her laughter. We all laughed loudly, as if we needed that at that moment, to let it out. We hadn't cried, so I suppose that through a guffaw, we released a lot of emotion. But we noticed that someone else was laughing. Across the street, someone barely visible among the trees. Behind a fence delimiting a Mexican Social Security Institute clinic, someone or something was laughing with us. Someone hidden in the shadows. A man in black. Motionless. Staring at us. Our brief moment of peace ended. He was smiling at us. It seemed he was mocking us. He took a step back. Disappeared. As if the shadows had pulled him away. Or as if he had vanished right there, in front of us. We were stunned, but we knew who it was. Deep down, we knew who it was, who had come to mock us, to show us that he had returned, that he had taken him away. To continue, I have to go back, recount what happened on the morning of December 18th, 2003, almost 20 years ago, when my 5 classmates and I talked about supernatural things during recess. We were in 9th grade. We were 2 days away from winter break. And we knew that Aaron was going to be transferred to another school. That our friendship, as we knew it, at least at that stage, was coming to an end. We thought it would be interesting to get an Ouija board to play. To have an experience. A story we all shared to remember together. If we ever reunited, we set out to research with acquaintances on the subject. We agreed to gather all the information possible and do it right. To seek all the elements we would need for it to really work. To speak with something. I still remember everything we mentioned on Friday during recess. To get black candles to place at each corner of the board, a glass of water, a plate with salt, even to seal the board with the blood of the participants in the session. Nothing that would hurt us. We were told that pricking our fingers and putting it on the board would be enough. Anyway, you can imagine all that we had to find. After classes, we met up and went to buy the board and the ingredients we would need. Only one important thing was missing. The place. Where could we play without anyone bothering us? Elias remembered an unfinished construction site behind his house. We could bring the Ouija board, and as soon as the workers left, we could jump over from his house without anyone noticing. It seemed like a good idea, and we set out to do it. Once there, we looked for the most hidden place, where the least amount of sunlight came in, and above all, with the fear that someone outside would see us lighting candles, as we knew that would merit a good scolding. It was a sunny afternoon outside, but we found a way to immerse ourselves in darkness, to begin installing everything we had brought for that session. We lit the candles, placed the water and salt, and of course, we didn't forget the fabulous idea of using blood. Aaron and Luis were the most excited about the topic, so they decided they would hold the planchette. Lucy, Elias, Aldo and I formed a sort of circle around them, holding hands. and then we began with the questions. Is anyone there?
Yes.
Do you want to play with us?
Y-E-S.
What is your name? We all looked at each other strangely. That didn't seem like a name, but Aaron was just laughing. He was extremely skeptical and said, how could we believe in that? That it was clear Luis was moving the planchette. But Luis's expression of terror indicated that it was not so. As the questions progressed, we came to know who we were talking to. It told us it was a sorcerer who had died at the stake in 1750, in what is now Saudi Arabia. Its name was Al-Ras. At some point it proposed something to us. It said that for us to believe in its existence, in its power, it could make any one of us enjoy the luxuries we had always desired. And Aaron, wanting to come across as the only one who didn't believe, told it he accepted.
I want everything someone could desire to be happy. I'll give you whatever you want.
The board then pointed to the number 20. Then it spelled out the word, years. Aaron said yes, without even understanding what it meant. The board also pointed to that word. Yes. At that moment, a chilling thunderclap echoed through the place. We all let go, jumping in fright. But I saw something. Something else in that dimness. Barely illuminated by the faint candlelight, there was something with us. Something that had come to never leave. We ended the session and left the house. That sunny afternoon had clouded over, and now a rain was falling that seemed more and more like a storm. With the vacation, we tried to forget about the matter, about that session, and when we returned, as we already knew, Aaron didn't come back. Just a few months later, we learned that his father had gotten a very good job with the government, with excellent benefits and a very high salary. And well, although Aaron had never lacked in the end, he had a rather comfortable life. He could afford luxuries he hadn't allowed himself before. Thanks to his father's new job, he invested in opening several hardware and construction businesses, and they lived comfortably. 4 years later, Aaron's father became ill. He died, leaving the businesses to his son and wife. But it wouldn't all be for Aaron right away, as his mother died a few months later with no apparent reason. They said it was from grief. So young and with that inheritance, Aaron began to live a life of luxury cars, houses, land, opulence. He drifted away from his friends and changed. He only kept in touch with Lucy. The two of them had always felt attracted to each other, though they didn't know it. They ended up getting married, and we didn't hear from them for years. Until that call in January. They say one is skeptical until one experiences the paranormal firsthand. And so, Aaron paid the price for having played with the occult. His life. After the funeral, the cremation, after leaving his ashes in the crypt, we headed to an apartment near the airport. Aaron and Lucy had several that they rented out as part of their many businesses. We entered and settled into a nice circle-shaped living room, very comfortable. And Lucy headed to the kitchen to return with a beer for each of us. She told us the next part of the story.
I suppose we have to talk about the elephant in the room, right? I think we all know why we're here. What we summoned 20 years ago has returned to collect that debt. We all knew it would, didn't we? Because I don't think I was the only one who dreamed of him in these last few days.
At that moment, we all nodded. Personally, I had dreamed of it since the 20 years of that first session had been completed, not of the entity, but of that day, as if a debt that was returning was making itself present. Aldo and Elias commented that they had a recurring dream with a black-clad figure, very similar to the one we saw outside the funeral home. They had dreamed of him on several occasions, from December 18th until the night of Aaron's death. Luis, for his part, said that, like me, he had dreamed of that day during the last few weeks, which at that moment we confessed to the others, was that both he and I had already seen it before. That day, among the shadows, present in the room, the afternoon we summoned it. Here I have to take a break, to go back 10 years in the story, to an encounter Luis and I had. Luis had become very religious, so much so that at one point, he felt the call to become a priest. He was particularly devoted to Saint Benedict, a saint who is well known for helping and interceding for people when they are in danger from evil. Luis and I always knew that what we had brought, what we had set free that day, was very close to us. Only we could feel that impressive evil, that closeness of evil that we could never explain. From that day on, from the conversation I had with Luis, I understood that we had both become, how to put it, more susceptible to paranormal phenomena, to see things, to feel presences. Even for me, as I told you in another story, entities would attach themselves to me. Luis, for his part, felt accompanied by a presence at all times. It would appear to him in dreams, a burned man, with blisters that seemed about to burst at any moment. Over time, he no longer only saw it while asleep, but reflected in mirrors, behind him, as if keeping a certain distance, always without doing anything, always motionless. And remember, it was he and Aaron who had their hands on the planchette, on the board. They were the ones who brought it. I think that's why it manifested itself more to him than to me. When I met with Luis after he was ordained, I asked him to bless my Saint Benedict medal. It has a very powerful sacramental that protects you from the action of evil. The letters that make it up are part of a very powerful prayer to expel lower astral beings.
Crux Sancti Padris Benedicti, Crux Sacra Signum et Lux, Non Draco Sit Mihi Dux, Vadereto Satanas, Nunquam Suade Mihi Vana, Sunt Mala Quae Libas, Ipse Venena Bibas.
The medal has a prayer and a special ritual with which it has to be blessed, and obviously, it has to be done by a priest. Luis did it. I realized he was also using one. Some years earlier, I had gotten a tattoo of the cross of Saint Benedict over a pentagram. When Louis saw it, he asked me, "What are you trying to hide from?" And he smiled. "You already know what," I replied. That day he confessed to me that in faith he found an escape from those nightmares, those visions that terrified him. That in prayer he found peace, and that to a large extent, escaping from that was a great reason for dedicating his life to religion. That day we had dinner together, and didn't see each other again until now. Accompanied by the rest of the group, when we were all together gathered at Lucy's apartment, she told us everything about those last days of Aaron's. I will tell the rest of this story in her own words. From her perspective, everything seemed to be going wonderfully for Aaron's family since we left middle school. Everything was smooth sailing, but there was something strange. Some mysterious marks appeared on his back, as if they were scars caused by burns. They didn't pay much attention to it. He went to a dermatologist and they told him that sometimes the skin loses pigmentation due to stress issues. But what stress could he have if his family was going through their best moment? As you know, I stayed in contact with Aaron. It's no secret to you that he and I always felt attracted to each other. So a few months after he left, we became a couple. We dated for a few years. And when we were both 20, we got married. We were too young. But by this point, Aaron already owned his father's businesses, who had died when he had just turned 18. His mother died 7 months later. At the wedding, we had a big ceremony, a big party. But there was always something strange. Never in Aaron's presence could a candle be lit. On our wedding day, no candle stayed lit. At home, I couldn't light candles on my altar. And now at the wake, you saw it. The candles could never stay lit. as if something didn't want a light to shine for him. We could never be parents. We tried and tried. We underwent studies. Aaron was sterile, and they found a rare condition in him. The ducts responsible for transporting sperm were blocked by scars, as if he had suffered from some disease or injury. But it was a very rare condition, the doctor said. The scars were in both testicles and were very large. Too large. When we got that news, it changed his demeanor a lot. He started to party hard, get into harder stuff. He stopped coming home. And obviously, he started cheating on me. I never confronted him about anything. I told him it didn't matter, that I loved him. But something broke when he received that news. I don't know. Losing his parents so young, not being able to be a father, the responsibility of everything he had to manage, everything ended up slowly consuming him, little by little. I don't know how we lasted so long. Until August of last year, we divorced. That's why this apartment is furnished. This is where I came to live after we separated. I put up with everything from him. I put up with so much, but it's because I truly loved him. When we separated, he cut way back on the partying. I saw him calmer. He said losing me had opened his eyes, and he wanted another chance. I told him I would continue living in the apartment and that I wanted to see him doing well. But that I wouldn't go back to his side until I saw that he was truly changing. He left me a set of keys to his house and told me that at some point I would need them. And without thinking much about it, I put them in my coat pocket. The months passed, and I saw him getting better each time. He was even attending support groups, and I felt happy. I thought it was the light at the end of the tunnel. But no, no, it wasn't. That day arrived. December 18th arrived. Aaron woke me up with a call at 3 a.m. He told me that something had woken him up. A raspy voice in his ear.
Hello?
He woke up startled. He saw the shadow of someone running out of his bedroom, towards the living room. He had a gun in his nightstand, so he didn't hesitate to grab it, to go out and check, thinking that maybe a burglar had broken in. But it would have to be a very skilled burglar, because the alarms on the doors and windows hadn't been triggered. He checked, but he didn't find anything strange. He went back to bed, but he couldn't sleep for the rest of the night. In the morning, I called him around 8 to see how he was doing. I thought I was going to wake him up, but he was already awake. He told me he had had a very strange night. One of those where you try to sleep, but you just end up tossing and turning in bed. He decided to start the day early. Exercise, shower, go to the office, check some numbers. He thought that way. By the time night came, he would be so tired that he would drop like a rock. It seemed like a good plan to me. I wished him a good day and we said goodbye. That early morning I was sleeping peacefully when, again, a call from Aaron woke me up. He told me that something was happening at his house, that he was sleeping, well, when a foul odor had woken him up. He told me it smelled like when you burn hair, or chicken feathers, or things like that. A very strong smell that he didn't know where it was coming from. The area where the house is located is a gated community where there are obviously no restaurants or kitchens around. And even if there were, I don't think anyone would be cooking at 3 a.m. Aaron got up, left his bedroom, and detected that the smell was coming from inside the house. He went downstairs. Everything was turned off. Only the small emergency lights dimly illuminated that gloom. He detected a bright light at the back in the kitchen, a light that was filtering through the cracks of the door. It was fire. Something was burning in there. He ran scared, thinking that maybe a grill on the stove was on, or a short circuit had caused a fire. But when he went in, he saw the horror in disbelief. Forgive me. Forgive me for taking a breath, but what Aaron told me he saw still terrifies me. Aaron said he saw that something was burning, the remains of what appeared to be a black bird. something that couldn't be clearly distinguished, that was engulfed in flames. There was so much smoke that he couldn't recognize what it was. He sent me a video. It was disgusting. He extinguished that thing, he threw it in the trash outside the house. He took his car keys and drove over here. When he arrived, he smelled terrible. We thought the smell had impregnated his clothes, so he went to shower, and I put his clothes in the wash and dryer while he showered. That night he slept here, with me. If I had known it would be the last night we spent together, I would have hugged him every minute. The next day I visited Aaron at his house. He seemed insecure despite having ordered a thorough cleaning of the place. The smell prevailed. And he, not his clothes, he emanated that burned smell. No fragrance could disguise it. It seemed to ooze from his pores. He stopped going out in public due to the embarrassment it caused him. On December 22nd, he called me at 6 a.m. He asked me to go see him. He told me it was urgent. I got ready and headed to his house. When I arrived, I rang the doorbell and he opened right away. It seemed he was there, on the other side of the door, waiting. He hugged me and thanked me for coming. He told me that something was happening, that at night he was sleeping as much as that stench would allow, when he felt someone grab him by the neck. He thought it was something happening in the dream, until he started to feel a burning sensation that woke him up. A real burning. Something was burning him. He got out of bed, but he didn't see anything and he wanted to think it had just been a very real dream. But when he woke up in the morning, when he got up to go to the bathroom, in the mirror, he could see the mark of whatever had touched him. That's when he called me. I remember very well what he told me, the fear in his voice.
The time has come, Lucy. It's coming for me.
I felt as if an arrow had pierced my body. The memory came with the force of a tornado and shook me. It shook my mind and body. I told him no. How could he believe in those things, that it was impossible? Although, deep down I was very afraid for him. Deep down I believed it could be true. From then on, Aaron had vivid dreams where he saw himself burning. Each dream was very real. He said he could feel his skin burning, how he saw his skin peeling away from the flames. And upon waking, there were always burning marks, as if they were truly burns. On January 2nd, he called me. He told me he needed me to accompany him somewhere. I hesitated a bit, but in the end, I agreed. We went to a rather ugly neighborhood. The truth is, I was scared to death. At the entrance to the neighborhood, there was a group of men in very poor condition. Aaron asked them about Mrs. Martina, and they told him where she lived, but not before asking him for their respective beer. We entered Mrs. Martina's house. It was the last one. The one in the back. She had cages, where you could see some feathers like from a rooster, or something like that. Aaron knocked. The woman opened the door. She looked unkempt. Very worn clothes and a piercing gaze. She stared in Aaron's direction. She said we could come in, but then she almost shouted,
"Not you. You are not welcome."
Aaron stood still, thinking she was referring to him, but the woman pulled him by the arm to take him inside. I came in behind. The first thing she did was ask him,
"What did you do?"
She didn't know we were coming, and yet she asked him that question. At first we tried to make her believe that we didn't know what had happened, but the woman knew more than she appeared to. We ended up confessing what we had done years ago, in great detail. She fell silent for a moment, then raised her gaze, looked at him intently and told him she couldn't help him, that no one could, that she hoped he had enjoyed it, because it was his turn to pay. Aaron got up very upset, because he had paid a large sum of money for that woman to help him, and the only thing she told him was that there was no escape. He ran out of that house. I was about to follow him, when the woman grabbed me by the arm and told me,
"Girl, that burned being, that demon, It's coming for him, but it won't hesitate to remove anyone who gets in the way. He made a deal, and his time is up.
I ran out after Aaron, who was already waiting for me in the car. He drove here, to the apartment, and dropped me off at the building entrance. I saw him drive away at full speed, and that day, I didn't hear from him again. At 4 a.m., he woke me up again. He was crying. He told me he had seen it, that a strong burning sensation in his chest had woken him up, that he ran to the bathroom to check himself, and there he saw it, behind him, outside the bathroom, waiting for him. There it was, reflected in the mirror. He saw it approach until it was perfectly visible. It was no longer hiding even in the darkness. He saw its burned face, behind him. Its skin was peeling off in pieces and the smell of burning was getting closer. Its expression was mocking, as if it were enjoying that torture. It didn't make a sound. It only smiled with those rotten teeth, with those lips that looked melted. He said it was the most terrifying thing he had ever seen, or even imagined. When that thing took another step towards Aaron, he closed his eyes, but that didn't stop it from continuing to approach. He felt it. He felt it touch him, burn him, as if it were a hot iron. And the pain made him scream and flail to defend himself. But when he opened his eyes, he realized there was no one else there. He told me he couldn't take it anymore, and hung up on me. My only hope was Luis. That's why I looked for him. I went to ask around the neighborhood, because some time ago someone had told me he had become a priest. I asked everywhere until I found someone who knew where his parish was. Do you remember, Luis? When I went to look for you, the first thing you told me was that you were very afraid of when this day would come. You asked me about Aaron and I brought you up to speed on everything. And in fact, guys, thanks to Luis, I was able to contact the rest of you. Through his work, Luis knows someone who knows someone who knows someone who ends up knowing everyone. He told me that our soul does not belong to us, that it belongs to the Creator. So we cannot make a deal offering something that is not our property. That God forgives those who repent from the heart. Those who do not only repent when they feel death near, but he also told me that there is one sin that cannot be forgiven. Suicide. For that, there is no opportunity for repentance. We believe that perhaps that is why that thing could not come and take something on its own. It wanted to hurt him first, torture him, make it unbearable, make him attempt against his life, and only in that way, drag him into eternal punishment. According to what Luis told me, we had to prepare a way to help him before he did something. There was no coming back from. All that day and the next, I tried to communicate with Aaron. I went to look for him and he was nowhere to be found. He called me again at night, around 10 a.m. He told me he was very tired. I could hear it in his voice. He hadn't been able to sleep since the last time we had spoken. He covered all the mirrors in the place he was at, because he always saw himself burned. With a very sad voice that I could barely hear, he asked me to forgive him. He told me he loved me, and that I was the best thing that had ever happened to him, but that he couldn't take it anymore. It seemed like a goodbye, and I told him I had spoken with Luis, to wait for me, to tell me where he was because we could find help, that I loved him, that he should hold on, that he shouldn't give up. He told me he was already at his house, that he would see me in the morning, and I saw him, early, at his house. He looked very emaciated. I brought him the breakfast he liked, but it was impossible to crave anything in that house, with that terrible smell that filled it. He had marks he was trying to hide from me. We chatted for a while. I made him coffee. I spent time with him until the afternoon, when as much as I didn't want to, I made him something to eat. I tried to tell him that I had spoken with Luis, that we would find a way to help him, but he didn't seem to care. When it started to get dark, he asked me to leave. He told me he needed to be alone, that we would see each other soon, and he hoped to be better, stronger. He took my hands and kissed them. He told me it was time for me to go, that he was grateful for everything. The next day, Luis called me first thing in the morning to tell me he was preparing everything, that we had to take Aaron to a church in a town near here. I went to Aaron's house to let him know. I rang the doorbell, but he didn't come out. He also didn't answer his phone. His car was in the driveway, and suddenly I felt something in my coat. The house keys. I went in. It no longer smelled bad. Everything seemed calm. The air felt different. I called out to him from the door, but he didn't respond. I went upstairs to the bedroom and saw the unmade bed. I heard the shower running, and I opened the bathroom door. There he was, on that red-stained floor. It was evident what had happened, and I would love, truly, I would love to tell you that he left peacefully. But his face reflected terror. His face had an expression that could not be erased. That's why I didn't let anyone open the coffin. In the midst of the shock, in those moments that seemed part of a nightmare, when I called the police, I remember seeing something in the bathroom, something written on the mirror. I would swear to you that it seemed to be that damned man who spoke to us through the Ouija board, written on the mirror, but backwards, almost as if it had been written from inside the mirror. I called Luis, then I located you all and, well, you know the rest of the story. When Lucy finished her account, she had no more tears left to cry, nor did we have words of consolation that could help her. I didn't know what to tell her. I still don't know. Friends of this community, sometimes you ask me if I don't miss the paranormal events that I used to experience more clearly. What I desire most in this life is to never experience them again, and to have never done what we did that day, 20 years ago.